Probably, but you ought to consider yourself fortunate. Next to Nephron, you've got the best shield in Alan Rist. Wraith frowned. Apparently, I'm second best to Nephron in a number of things. Chapter 7 Dreams and Nightmares. I started writing to chase away demons and to preserve the loved ones I had lost. After all these years, none of that has changed. The Book of Bryn. The moist hand clamped over Bryn's mouth. The other one wrapped around her waist, trapping her arms. She was hauled away, her heels dragging across stone as the row rasped in her ear. "Relax, don't struggle. I have you now. Just need to get you back to the pile."
Back to the pile?
Bryn couldn't scream, couldn't move. She could barely breathe. She tried to kick her feet, but that did nothing to save her. As disgusting as it might be, she tried to bite the hand, but her mouth couldn't open. The thing continued to whisper in a frighteningly reassuring tone, as if it were trying to save her. But it wasn't speaking to her. Not really.
"Yes, everything will be okay. We have you now. Just need to get back to the pile. Need to get back so I can eat and finally sleep."
She felt it lick her cheek.
"Such a sweet face."
She woke up, her heart racing. Something covered her face, making it hard to breathe. Bryn reached up and found the pillow. Ripping it away, she threw it on the floor.
"Stupid thing," she whispered in the dark, shaking.
She propped herself on her elbows and took a few more breaths, calming down. The row was long dead, and Bryn was in a pretty little home on Lionette Street, in Little Wren. Moonlight entered the window, casting a skewed square across the floor, the wall, and over the feet of the two beds. Rhone's was empty again. Downstairs, Padera was snoring. Bryn's nightshirt stuck to the sweat on her skin. She shivered, drawing the blanket around her.
"Just a dream," she imagined her mother saying. "Go back to sleep."
But Bryn knew that if she tried, the row would come again. It always did. Once the row invaded her sleep, only daylight chased it off. She'd managed to go a whole week this time without a visit, but tonight... She leaned over the edge of the bed and pointed a finger at the fallen pillow.
"I blame you."
Bryn wasn't used to pillows. Never had one before. The bag full of feathers collapsed under the weight of her head, folding in and doing its best to smother her. She sighed, frowned, and folded her arms. She wasn't going back to sleep any time soon. She'd be exhausted in the morning, but there was no getting around it. She was up. She started to swing her feet off the side of the bed, but pulled them back at the last second. She spun around on her stomach and carefully lowered her head to peer under the bed. Then she looked under Rhone's. Nothing. Relief and embarrassment washed over her in equal part.
"How old am I?"
She got up and fumbled in the dark, her hands searching for the leather satchel. She had made the carrying case herself. A single piece of goat hide was folded around her stack of parchments and bound up with straps. From the small night table, she grabbed up a handful of quills. Bryn had been using reeds dipped in ink to mark on the pages, but found the quills better. After employing hundreds of people to strip birds of their feathers for making arrows, Alan Rist had piles of naked quills lying around. They, too, were hollow, and much more durable than reeds. Thanks to Moya, Bryn had hundreds. Bryn carried the parchments, ink, and quills to the desk by the window and set them down. After a long winter, she had an impressive pile of vellum parchment. Part of the stack was a translation, as best she could manage, of the tablet rubbings they had saved from the Old One's chamber in Neath. She was still working on those, but after translating the metallurgy portion for Rowan, she had jumped ahead in order to record more recent events while things were still fresh in her mind. She did that a lot. Bryn first started writing about growing up in Dol Ren, focusing on her parents. Then she jumped forward to the trip Persephone led to Neath. She went to great literary effort to eviscerate Grunbach the dwarf, recording his treachery as a legendary, the very definition of evil. Then Bryn jumped even further ahead and wrote about life in Alunrist. Frey and runes mingled about, as well as fire and ice, or Gula and Rulin, who also had problems coexisting. A number of outbursts had resulted in some deaths. Persephone decided to segregate the tribes before riots broke out. The cold weather helped to cool tempers, but both were warming up again. Since sleep wasn't an option, she thought she'd do some writing, but before starting, she decided to reread the section where the Gilarabrin ate the Rao, her favourite part. The night was cold, and she grabbed a blanket from her bed and was searching for a lamp when she heard voices coming from the street below. Who is out chatting in the middle of a chilly night? She returned to the window and leaned closer. Whoever it was spoke softly, and in runic.
No, I forbid it, and you know better than to be out here. I am hungry,
the voice said in a hoarse whisper, just like in her dream. Bryn shivered.
I'll arrange it, like I did with Jara. You have to trust me. Haven't I taken care of you in the past? You need to be patient. It's been a long time. I'm tired and need to sleep. We have an agreement. Spring is here, and the time is approaching. Until then, you need to stay hidden. I can smell them. All of them. So many. The wind blows south. It's maddening. It won't be long now, I promise. Then you can kill for me. Now, let's go back, and don't slip out again, or we'll both be killed.
With every ounce of courage she could muster, Bryn pushed the window open wider and stuck her head out far enough to look down. All she saw were a pair of shadows disappearing around the corner of her building. In the dark of her room, barely illuminated by the pale moonlight, she drew the blanket tighter and shivered. Early the next morning, Bryn stood in front of her adopted home, looking up at the bedroom window. The house was one of the many two-story whitewash and timber buildings. This was no warrior's home. Its carved door, tile and stencil work, branching stair banister, and flower beds filled with perennials already beginning to bloom, spoke of a place once cherished. Bryn felt guilty being there, and in 8 months she hadn't so much as moved the furniture. Persephone had insisted they weren't conquerors of Alunrist, but allies, what Nephron referred to as liberators. A fair number of Frey had packed up and walked out. Persephone let them go. Huhana Hill, one of the nicer parts of the city, became the first to empty. That previous autumn, when the Frey fled Alunrist, Huhana Hill became a neighbourhood of empty houses, and Persephone filled the vacant buildings with surviving inhabitants of Dol Ren, creating the Rune District. Given that most of the other clans had homes to return to, Huhana Hill became known as Little Wren. The house that Padera, Roan, and Bryn shared was one of the finest. There were bigger, more elaborate ones, but inch for inch this one was the most pleasant. Bryn was certain that wasn't an accident. Persephone would have invited them to stay with her in the Kype, if such a thing had been practical, or desired. No one, not even Persephone, liked the stark, cold fortress filled with intimidating male Instaria. Many of the Frey in the city were female, and while they didn't exactly welcome the runes, they didn't protest either. At least not publicly. Over the winter, little Wren had begun to resemble Dal Wren, if it had died and gone to Elysium. The well in the centre of the tree-lined square was frequented by the likes of Arlena, Viv Baker, and Autumn, whose husbands, like most of the able men, were in training and bunked at the fortress. Gifford lived in Little Wren too, as did Tressa, Habert, and Matthias Hager, who was too old to walk up the hill's steps alone. Padera was the first to call it Little Wren, and that's how Bryn, how everyone living there, had come to see it. But on that morning, looking up at her pretty new home, Bryn saw that part of town as sinister. They had stood right here. She looked around, trying to gauge the exact spot where the two speakers had held their conversation. They didn't sound human. Bryn imagined them as a pair of Rao, but that was most certainly the result of her nightmare. And they had spoken runic. Not Frey. Near the corner of the block, just below her window, was a flower bed. The four delicate sprouts that had emerged with the warming weather had been crushed, pressed down in the soft dirt. She bent over to look at the depression in the soil.
Lose something!
The voice came from directly behind her.
Heart pounding, Bryn shot up and spun so fast she nearly fell. A hand grabbed her forearm, catching her. Terrified, she pulled back and nearly screamed. But it wasn't a row that had hold of her.
"Oh, sorry, didn't mean to scare you," the young man said, letting her go the moment she was steady again. "Shouldn't sneak up on people, then," Bryn snapped.
The moment she spoke, she wished she could take the words back. This wasn't the first time Bryn had seen this particular young man. She had first noticed him in the training yard, a place she'd passed each day when delivering Roan's midday meal. If left to herself, Roan would forget to eat. So Padera cooked and Bryn delivered. Would-be warriors were always practicing in the upper courtyard in front of the smithy, and this young man was always there, even in the snow and rain. On warm days he'd take his shirt off, and Bryn was thankful he was so intent on his lessons that he didn't see her sneaking a peek his way. His body was pure, lean muscle, but it was his smile that attracted her most. As he sparred, a huge grin dominated his face, like he was taking down a giant or slaying a dragon. Something wonderfully wild lay behind such a grand grin. She'd felt the same way about Wraith when he first came to Dal Wren. Neither of these men were farmers, shepherds, or woodcutters. When she first noticed the young man, she thought he looked familiar. Back in Tyre, there had been a boy, a scrawny kid who lived with Wraith and Malcolm. Bryn only noticed him because he was one of the few beneath the wool who was her age, and he came to the few chieftain meetings that Wraith had attended. But the young man she watched practicing in the upper yard, the same one who'd just grabbed her arm, was bigger, fuller, and taller. He sported disheveled locks, dark, beautiful eyes, and patches of hair on his cheeks and chin. The boy she knew from Tyre had been covered in a torn, stained rag. This man wore a long shirt, cinched tight at his waist, by a sword belt holding two blades. What had started as a chore became the most anticipated part of her day. After dropping off the food for Rowan, Bryn would linger in the yard outside the smithy, watching. Each day she hoped he would notice her, but he never looked her way. During the long walk back home, she daydreamed about the day they would eventually meet. Most scenarios involved him making some blunder, falling perhaps. He'd feel foolish, look awkward, but she would smile and make light of the misstep, assuring him it happened to everyone. Then he would invite her to take a walk. As they strolled through some lovely forest, not that there were any within 2 days' travel, she would tell him about her book. She'd talk about language, writing, and the story she had found on the tablets from Neith. The young hero would be so impressed that he would fall in love with her. They would marry, have children, then grandchildren, and finally die in each other's arms, wrinkled and grey. Reality was quite different.
"I wasn't sneaking. I just... You certainly weren't announcing yourself from afar."
Bryn didn't know why she said it. She was nervous, off balance, and the words just came out, and they came out angry.
"Well, I...
He looked awkward, then glanced at the house.
"I was looking for Rowan, the metalsmith. I heard she lived around here."
"She does." Bryn then eyed him suspiciously.
"What do you want with her?"
"I want to be fitted for armor."
"Oh,"
Bryn said stupidly. Having saved her from falling, he remained close. She could have leaned out and kissed him. The thought hovered in her mind, forming a terrible distraction. Catching herself, wondering how moronic she must look staring his way, she blinked.
Rowan works up at the fortress in the upper courtyard. She lives here, is supposed to at least, but she spends all her time over there."
"Yeah, I know."
The pair of lips, dark eyes, and open shirt said.
"But I was just up there, and..."
"And what?"
He shrugged. "I didn't see her anywhere around. So I thought maybe she came here. And then I found you on all fours groping around the ground, so I..."
"I wasn't on all fours, and I most certainly wasn't groping."
He held up his hands.
"Honestly, I don't know what you were doing.
If you must know, I was looking for footprints."
Another sentence she wished she could take back. "This conversation is not at all like I imagined." His eyes narrowed.
What?
"Never mind. Rowan's not here."
The young man hesitated, then finally nodded, turned, and walked away.
"You're such an idiot!"
Bryn screamed in her head.
"Great impression! Maybe if I'd actually been eating the dirt, if I'd had a mouthful of soil that was spilling in clumps over my lips and was..."
"Why were you looking for footprints?"
The young man had stopped. He was staring back at her.
"I heard people talking below my window last night. I was wondering who they were."
"And you thought you could tell that by their footprints?"
He lifted his own foot and looked at the bottom.
"You can do that."
She scowled. He was making fun of her now.
"He thinks I'm an idiot. Great."
"No."
She felt her heart sink.
"Please, just leave."
She felt so awful she might cry, and absolutely didn't want him to see that. He turned to walk away again, but once more stopped.
"Okay, so you have to tell me, or it'll bother me all day.
Why were you looking for footprints?
How would that help you identify who these people were?"
"I hate my life,"
Bryn didn't say anything. She didn't trust herself to talk any more, and thought he might just leave if she remained silent. He didn't. Feeling stupid, no, she was well beyond that. She sighed.
I never had a chance with him anyway. What was I thinking? I wasn't. I was dreaming. Look at him. Gorgeous, strong, dashing. And those eyes. Those eyes. And then there's me, a pale twig with no shape. An orphan who spends her days scribbling nonsense with discarded quills. He never was going to be interested in me. I might as well light the pyre under that dream and just let the whole thing burn. I was looking for footprints that weren't human. Are Frey feet that different?
Not Frey.
He looked at her, puzzled.
You mean... Wait, what do you mean? A dog or something?
She shook her head.
Dogs don't talk.
He stared at her, eyes narrowed, his head tilted slightly to one side.
Then, what do you think was below your window last night?
Don't say it. Don't say it. Don't say it!
He walked back to her. His expression was exactly how she pictured he would look as she captivated him with tales of her literary prowess just before he fell in love with her.
Well, that wasn't going to happen now.
She sighed and gave up.
A row. You moron, Bryn. I told you not to say it. Idiot. Idiot.
He'd laugh now. No, most likely he'd ask what a row was, and then not believe her when she explained. She'd faced the humiliating experience of telling the tale of how she'd once nearly had her face eaten by one. Any thoughts about her being the sort of person he should stay clear of would be confirmed. He'd see her for what she really was. The real her. What she never was in her fantasies.
Really?
He said. Bryn didn't know how to respond. She searched his eyes for evidence of sarcasm, his lips for hints of mockery. Nothing. Nothing. Obvious, at least.
You believe me?
He nodded easily, shifting his weight and resting a hand on the butt of one sword. The confident, casual act was so insanely attractive that Bryn sucked in a breath.
My mother told me about the row. Come from bodies left unburied. People who were wronged in life. Betrayed, usually. Wait! You're Bryn, aren't you? You...
Her throat closed on her. She swallowed hard to clear it.
You know me?
Well... He chuckled.
What?
Her heart hesitated mid-beat. He pointed to the house. I was told Roan, Padera, and Bryn lived here. I've met Roan. Then he chuckled again. I'm guessing you aren't Padera.
Oh...
Bryn laughed then, too.
No. No, I'm not her.
Yeah, I heard she's like a couple hundred years old and doesn't have any teeth. She nodded.
I'm Tesh.
He extended a hand. Bryn hadn't shaken many hands. Her mother and friends were huggers. Unsure and tentative, she reached out. He did the rest. He had rough skin that in places was polished to smooth calluses, and a firm grip that tightened in stages, but he didn't squeeze. He pulled her hand toward him, giving it three solid pumps before letting go.
"Nice to meet you,"
she replied, then immediately wondered if that was the right thing to say. She'd thought it was appropriate, but coming out of her mouth it sounded too formal and...
Why do you think a row was here?
He asked, looking down at the flowerbed. She shrugged. Her hand was still up from the shake. Then she had to will it down to her side. She could still feel the warmth of his palm.
It's hard to explain, but what they were saying was...
Row talk?
Yes, but maybe it wasn't two row. Maybe it was one row and one... I'm not sure. I only know for certain that one was a row.
How do you know?
The voice. It sounded...
Tesha's eyes grew big, realization dawning.
You're Bryn!
We've already established that.
I mean, the Bryn.
Roan mentioned you. Told us about how you were grabbed by a row under a Derg mountain. She said you almost had your face eaten off.
Thanks a lot, Roan. I should just die now.
Is it the same one? Did it follow you? Tesh looked around, as if the monster might jump out at them from a nearby hedge.
No, Bryn said. The one in Neath was killed.
So, why is this one after you? Do you think it knew the other row?
After me?
The thought rocked her.
Is it? It was outside my window, wasn't it?
I didn't until just now.
Thanks. I'll never sleep again.
Sorry.
He looked guilty, which only made him more handsome.
What did it say? What did you hear?
The row said it was hungry, and the other one insisted it was too dangerous, and it had to wait. Said he would bring the row something to eat, that he would arrange it.
Arrange it?
Like he did with Jada.
What's Jada?
No idea.
And they weren't both row?
I don't know. Only one of them had a voice like the one I heard in Neath. But maybe not all row sound alike.
What did it sound like?
A raspy, dry whisper.
Tesh looked less convinced.
Maybe it was just an old man with a cold.
She shook her head.
I'm just saying. I mean...
He looked around again.
What would a row be doing here?
Row live in remote places where they can keep their piles of bones.
They need them to sleep on.
At least that's what my mother told me. Row roam the countryside looking for victims because once they wake, they can't sleep again until they feed, until they add bones to their pile.
So, how could such a thing live here?
Where would it keep its pile? People would notice.
Well,
she said, figuring it out as she spoke,
maybe someone is hiding it.
Tesh looked skeptical.
Someone is hiding a row?
It sounded that way.
That's like saying a lamb is hiding a lion.
Why wouldn't the row just eat the person keeping it?
I don't know.
Tesh scratched his head and narrowed his eyes.
Unless that person was Frey.
Maybe Rao don't eat Frey.
Bryn shook her head.
They were speaking runic.
Tesh looked skeptical.
Bryn shrugged.
Maybe it was just an old man with a cold.
Tesh looked up at the house again.
Maybe you should keep your window closed and bolted just the same, huh?
Yeah, she said.
An awkward silence followed.
Finally, she said, Well, when I see Roan, I'll mention you were looking for her.
Right.
And I guess I'll check back at the smithy.
Sounds like a plan, Bryn said.
She was torn. On the one hand, she didn't want him to go, but on the other, she didn't think she could endure more self-inflicted humiliation. Bryn watched him walk down the road around a corner.
Tesh,
she thought.
Not a bad name.
She'd expected something more like Spencer or Stanton. He looked like a Stanton.
Or maybe a...
Bryn!
She turned to see him coming back into sight, waving for her to join him. She trotted down and followed him around the corner. There, in another bed of would-be flowers, Tesh pointed to two sets of footprints. One was clearly made by a pair of common sandals. The other was barefoot, and had just three toes, and long, sharp claws.
Chapter 8 The Tetlan Witch. I think we accept all too readily what we're told by those we love. It isn't that our friends and family lie, but that they don't know the truth. The Book of Brin. Gifford sat in the corner on a small stool, his usual place when visiting Rome. She had a staff of more than 20, and a cripple anywhere else in the workshop was a roadblock to progress. He watched her work, and hoped to be on hand if she paused to eat the meals that Padera made and Brin carried up. The weather being so nice, he even dreamed of persuading her to go out to the courtyard for a picnic. He figured his chances were about the same as beating Brin in a foot race. But if there was one thing Gifford had in abundance, it was dreams. Leaning back against the wall of the smithy, he watched Roan beat sparks out of a brilliantly glowing glob. She didn't hit very hard and had to take frequent rests, but there was a single-minded clarity of purpose behind each stroke. When beating metal, Roan was more authoritative, decisive, and sure of herself than Nephron when he gave a speech at the General Assembly. Even the three dwarfs took direction from her. Creating iron swords turned out to be harder than anyone had thought. That included Roan. Her first attempts ended in failure. Observing the process was distinctly different from replicating it. Roan had lamented her misery, explaining the hundreds of little specifics she hadn't noticed, things she didn't even know to look for. The amount of air, when to pump the bellows, the exact time and temperature to leave a blade in the furnace, the ratio of carbon to iron, and how often to temper. They saw their first snow fall before Roan produced her first sword, and it was an awful-looking thing, heavy and dull. Gifford expected the dwarfs to be of more help, but, as it turned out, none of them had a clue about metallurgy. Still, Frost and Flood were able to build first-rate forges and workstations throughout the fortress and the city by studying the ones the Frey had made. This tripled the smithing capacity of Alan Rist. They also trained members of each clan, who were charged with going back to their dolls and building their own equipment. While Frost and Flood were busy building the infrastructure of smithing, Rain spent the winter days leading teams of miners who dug for raw materials. It wasn't long before carts of iron and coal flooded into Alan Rist. All this help was well appreciated, but it was up to Roan to figure out the magical secrets of metallurgy and the keys to sword-making. A major breakthrough occurred when Brin finished translating the entire text from their trip to Neath. Gifford had been there when she read the passages. Roan had sat in open-mouthed wonder, listening to what Brin said, calling the girl a genius. Brin laughed, saying she had no idea what she'd just said, but Roan understood at least some of it. Despite Brin's genius, Roan continued to struggle, and the number of failures grew into a mountain that the dwarfs routinely melted down for new attempts. But it wasn't just the method that vexed Roan. Part of the problem was her inability to physically wield a heavy hammer. That issue was largely resolved when she created a smaller, more Roan-sized tool. The last part of the equation was Roan's belief that the formulas of the old one weren't right. Maybe Brin translated incorrectly, or perhaps the prisoner in the Agave had held back some of his secrets, but she kept insisting that she could do better. Even after her first success, Roan wasn't satisfied. She was looking for something more. Under pressure from Persephone, Roan was forced to establish a method others could duplicate, even though it wasn't as good as Roan thought it could be. By midwinter, human-made iron weapons were being produced at varying degrees of quality all over Rulan. But Roan continued her struggle to find a secret only she seemed to know existed. Gifford could see it in her face, in the way her eyes searched in a void for answers to questions no one even knew to ask. She saw something no one else could, heard music others were deaf to. And for Roan, iron wasn't good enough. On that spring day, Gifford sat in the corner watching Roan use her whole body when swinging her specially made hammer. Her hair, chopped to a short, practical length, still hung in front of her eyes. A drop of sweat always dangled from the tip of her nose, and in her eyes was a fire hotter than the furnace. The woman was possessed. She's fighting her own war. Watching, Gifford had to wonder if Roan was happy. He imagined she liked feeling useful, and he knew she loved working, but Persephone had asked for 10,000 swords, helms, and shields of the finest metal. It didn't matter that by spring hundreds of smiths all over Rulan were working night and day to meet the quota. Persephone's decree was, for Roan, her own personal task, her fight to win or lose. Roan was the faithful hound who had run to death for her master. Was it a tragedy when such a dog died, or was that the life and death the animal would have chosen? Roan put down the hammer and set the glowing glob back into the fire. She wiped her forehead with the rag that was never far from her left hand. "You hungry, Roan?" Hearing her name, she looked up, her face red from the exertion and heat. She raised her brows in surprise. "When did you get here?"
"This morning," Gifford replied.
"Oh," she said, considering his answer. "Didn't see you come in." He held up the cloth sack and shook it side to side.
"Bwyn went to all the trouble of bringing it to you. Seems a waste not to eat."
Roan hated waste.
"Maybe later," Roan said. "I want to get some more done before noon."
Gifford held back a laugh.
"No, Roan. Be night soon."
"Night,"
Gifford nodded.
She looked out the window. "Oh, I guess so."
Roan looked back at him apologetically.
"And you've been here since this morning? I'm so sorry. I was so..."
He threw up a hand.
"No need to explain. You be busy, I know. It's fine. All of humanity depends on the swing of that mallet. But you need to eat, yes?"
"I suppose." She looked back at the crates of iron ore that would have to be smelted, then at the dwindling pile of charcoal.
A wagon pulled into the yard, another delivery. Roan rushed out. He could hear her voice outside, shouting,
"Where is it from?"
The reply was a list of village names that Gifford had never heard of. Roan probably knew every one of them. In her head, she likely had a list and mentally checked off the locations.
"Plenty of shields. Why so few swords?"
Gifford didn't hear the reply. The man's voice was low and didn't carry the way Roan's did. She stayed out there until the weapons were unloaded and the wagon rolled out. Then she returned, wiping her hands on her apron. Immediately she picked up her hammer and headed for the forge.
"Roan, you need to eat," Gifford said.
"You're still here?"
"Yes, Roan, still am. And you still need to eat. You know, food. It's like the fuel you put in the furnace. If you don't keep putting some in, The furnace goes out, and all things shut down. Don't want that, do you?
She smirked at him. He shook the bag once more.
Smells good. I think it's chicken.
She mopped her brow again, and, wiping her hands on the leather apron, walked over.
Let's eat outside, he said.
Why? She pierced him with an intense stare. Anyone unfamiliar with her would have seen it as suspicious or accusing. Gifford saw it as the bright light of a focused mind, capable of seeing beyond the shadows that confused everyone else. Rowan always wanted to know the why of everything.
I have this old friend I want you to meet, Gifford replied. You'll like him. He's quiet, but pleasant, handsome, and especially bright.
Another smirk. The sun. He grinned.
It's nice out. Pretty even.
With the desperate concern of a young mother asked to leave her child with an irresponsible guardian, she looked back at the ore glowing in the fire. Gifford pressed his lips together as he imagined how Roan would one day have her own children and look exactly that way. Gifford wouldn't be the father. He couldn't even be a guardian. She couldn't trust the wretched cripple to protect her baby. The thought hit him hard. He felt it in his stomach like a punch, and in his throat like a hand squeezing so hard he couldn't breathe.
What's wrong?
Ron asked, the bright light of her stare upon him again. Eyes that saw far too much.
Nothing,
he managed to say.
You look in pain. Are you feeling okay?
He put a hand to his chest.
Nothing a little sun wouldn't fix.
As they walked out of the smithy into the sun-bathed courtyard filled with the grunts, shouts, and clangs of men training to fight, Gifford mentally chided himself.
Greedy is what I am. I should appreciate that she talks to me at all. If Ivor hadn't messed her up so badly, she wouldn't dream of eating a meal with me. She'd have already married one of Tope's boys, and wouldn't be allowed to speak to the twisted pottery goblin.
The thought was well-intentioned, but the pain devouring his insides wasn't listening. He was going to lose her when the better man came along,
which could be virtually anyone.
No, not anyone. Not me. I'm not the one man whose touch she can accept. The man who could take her in his arms, who could kiss her without her screaming.
That day would come. He knew it would. He prayed each day for Mara to heal Roan, to let her live the normal life she deserved. He had faith it would happen, and when that day finally came, he would cheer for her, even if that same day his heart would shatter, and happiness, as he knew it, would fly out of his world.
"How about this?"
he said, finding a sunny patch of thick grass, far enough outside that the sounds of crashing hammers wouldn't interfere with conversation.
"Wait," she told him, and took off her apron. "Ground will be wet this time of year."
She laid the thick leather out for them to sit on. He smiled.
"What?"
He shook his head.
"Nothing. Just you."
"Just me what?"
"I just love you, that's all. I love you with every breath, every thought, every beat of my heart, because you're more than a person. You're a world unto yourself, a rich, vibrant, exciting, fascinating universe, and I want to spend my life exploring every forest, field, and stream." "Always thinking," he said.
Ron looked down at the leather beneath her knees and shrugged.
"Just didn't want us to get muddy."
He dumped out the bag's contents.
"Chicken legs!" Roan burst out with a huge smile. I love chicken legs. I'll have one, you have the other.
They both for you?
No, no. She was shaking her head, even as she bit into the first leg.
This isn't my meal. I'm just going to watch you eat.
You have some, too. It's good. She wiped grease from her chin, then grabbed up the other leg and held it out.
I'll have a bite.
Oh, and yellow cheese, she said, unwrapping the cloth-covered hunk.
He watched her devour the food in precise bites, while in front of them a class of soldiers practiced moves under the barking tutelage of a Frey instructor. Behind them, the smithy's little chimney belched black smoke that blew east with the spring breeze. Roan forced him to eat some of the chicken before she finished it.
Nice out, isn't it?
He lay back on his elbows. They were off the apron, and he felt the wet soak into his sleeves.
What did you say we do this every day?
Chewing, Roan looked around and nodded, but he wasn't certain which question she was answering.
If you like, we could go for a walk, he ventured.
Can't. She pointed at the smithy and swallowed. Have too much work.
I thought Persephone said she was astounded by how much you'd accomplished.
Still behind.
Says who?
Me.
But I'm only asking...
I can't, she told him.
Gifford was disappointed, even a little upset. He saw so little of her that he was slipping into his own depression. That was how he tried to rationalize everything afterward. But in truth, he didn't know why he said it. It just came out.
It's like old Ivy is alive again.
Roan looked as if he'd hit her with the smithing hammer. She stared down at the food, at the sack it came in, and at the grease on her hands.
You talked to Padera, didn't you?
Gifford had no idea what she meant.
I have talked to that old woman on many occasions.
Roan began to shake. Gifford felt his heart sink. He'd done something terrible. He'd hurt her somehow.
What's wrong, Roan?
Don't blame her.
It wasn't...
Roan began to cry.
Gifford hated himself. He had no idea what he'd done, but nothing, nothing in the world, was worse than hurting Roan.
He wanted to make it better, but didn't know how because he didn't know what he'd done.
Roan, what's going on?
She got up then and ran back to the smithy, abandoning her apron, Gifford, and the warmth of the sun. The old woman was in the kitchen cutting mushrooms into a series of neat slices while a kettle boiled over the cook fire.
What do you want?
She asked as Gifford let himself in.
I've just had a meal with Roan,
he said with an ominous tone in his voice.
Doubt that you just had a meal with Roan.
Padera scraped her choppings into her palm and tossed them into the pot.
If you ate with her, it would have been in the smithy, which had to have been hours ago, given your lightning-fast travel speed. Or has love given you invisible wings?
Gifford was going to be polite. She was an old woman, after all. He planned on being compassionate, easing his way to the point. But Padera was being her normal witch self, and Gifford cut right to the dark meat.
Did you kill Ivy?
The thought had come to him on the walk from the fortress, which was just as long as Padera described. It had also given him ample time to ponder why Roan was so upset. Guilt. She blamed herself for Ivor's death because Padera had killed him on her behalf. The old woman had her back to him as she faced the fire.
Hedera was just as hunched over as ever, her true form hidden beneath layers of old wool.
"By Ivy, do you mean Ivor the Carver?"
Gifford scowled. She knew who he meant.
"Yes."
"Why do you say that?"
Her tone was controlled, even relaxed.
"Why not surprised? Why not outraged? Why not laughter? Why hadn't she asked if he was making a joke, or yell at the false accusation?" "I told you. I just had a meal with Woan. A meal that ended with Woan weeping."
"I would imagine any meal with you would end that way."
"You did it, didn't you?"
He hobbled to the table and looked at the pile of uncut mushrooms.
"Was such a shock when he just died, when he went to sleep and failed to wake up. Did you poison him?"
Hedera silently prodded the fire.
"How you find these mushrooms?" he asked. "We all new to this place, but you can locate mushrooms. And some mushrooms be poisonous."
Hedera turned and peered with her one eye.
"What are you saying?"
"How old is you?"
"How old are you?"
she corrected him.
"You know I can't say that."
"If you can't talk, you should keep your mouth shut."
"How old?"
he persisted.
"Don't know. Lost count."
"Uh-huh. You always say that when anyone asks, don't you?"
"What does my age have to do with this?"
"You oldest in Dalwen."
"What of it, crippled boy?"
Her voice took on an edge.
"So, maybe you not even from Wen. Maybe you just showed up one day and have outlived all who knew that."
Hedera shambled back to the table and sat down in front of her mushrooms.
"And I suppose my husband Melvin and our sons were imaginary?"
"Maybe. I not met Melvin. Not met sons."
"Because you're a child."
"Most children outlive parents."
"No, they don't."
She looked almost sad, but it was hard to tell with that leathery melon face of hers.
"Most people don't live as long as I have."
"I'm thinking maybe no one lives as long as you."
Again, she gave him the squint.
"What are you saying, Gimp?"
"I'm saying that maybe you don't just look and act like a witch."
He saw the change in her face. A twitch, a grimace. Brief, but it was there. He touched a nerve.
"All people say the name. Use it when cussing. Just the name, not a god, so it's safe. But what if it isn't just a name? What if the witch is real?"
Hedera's malleable lips folded up into a smile.
"So, you aren't just accusing me of being a witch. You're saying I'm the witch."
"All those tales have to begin someplace."
"What stories are those?"
"That's just it. All Ilan knows the name, but no one knows what it means. I think you do."
She nodded.
"Yes, I do."
This admission surprised him. For all his bluster and certainty, he had still been guessing. He'd even been glad Bryn was gone. He had wanted to speak to Hedera alone. If he'd really believed his own suspicions, he wouldn't have walked into that witch's den alone. In retrospect, that might not have been the best idea. No one knew he was there.
"So, Was Ivy poisoned?
He asked.
Yes.
Padera picked up her knife.
Ivor was a bad, bad man. No one knew that. No one except me. Well, and Roan, of course. He hurt her. But you already know that.
All of Dal Wen knows that.
No. People suspect. But no one knows. Even I don't know all of it.
She leaned back and fixed him with a one-eyed glare.
Did you know he killed Roan's mother?
Roan told me she died like mine, in childbirth.
Assuming you mean childbirth, she tells everyone that. I think she's getting to the point where she can almost believe it.
In the past, the look Padera fixed on him had been an eccentricity. But standing before that mushroom-strewn table, Gifford now found it frightening.
Can she cast a hex with a look like that?
He had both of them to himself,
the old woman went on.
Roan and her mother Rihanna, both slaves with no recourse. Everyone saw Ivor as a great man, a pillar of the community, because he was also careful and kept his depravity confined to the inside of his home. I lived the closest. I heard the screams, and I didn't buy his explanations. I knew better. I'd seen his like before. Rihanna tried to run. Roan was about 9, and Rihanna was pregnant again. I think maybe she refused to give him another child. Or perhaps Roan was starting to grow up, starting to look more like a woman. And Rihanna knew what that meant. She wrapped Roan up and plotted to leave Wren. Had no idea where to go, or how she'd live. Rihanna was a slave. The only one in Wren at the time. Ivor had bought her while at an auction in Dorea. Once she had been a Gula, a war trophy.
Padera sucked on her lips a moment.
She was his property, and Ivor could do what he wanted. Never crossed Rihanna's mind that anyone might help. If she had come to me, things would have turned out different. But she was scared, and I was the last person she would trust. Like I said, I lived the closest, and Ivor was a clever man. He told Rihanna I was a witch, and that I would just as likely eat her as help her.
She gave Gifford a long, accusing stare.
Ivor caught up to them, and he beat Rihanna to death while Roan watched. He took Roan on a trip and disposed of the body. When they got back, Ivor told everyone Rihanna had died in childbirth. They offered condolences, but he acted like he didn't care because she had been just a slave. Folks thought he was in denial. His way of dealing with grief. It wasn't.
Gifford leaned on the table, trying to remain calm.
She's just trying to get into my head. So, you really the witch?
The witch?
You know what I mean.
Gifford couldn't bring himself to say the name, even though there were no R sounds in it. He couldn't say it. Not standing so close.
You're asking if I'm the Tetlin Witch?
He nodded.
What if I were? What would you do?
He didn't say anything. He honestly didn't know.
Would you call me out? Get the neighbors to tie me to some pile of last year's firewood and burn me to death?
He still didn't say anything. He'd never liked Padera. She'd always been cruel to him, while being kind to everyone else, which was worse than if she'd been mean to everyone. She once tried to explain it as some sort